welcome to minute 47 of season 12 of Move Our Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today from 12 Chimes It's Midnight and two five-minute podcasts, Josh Horowitz. Welcome back, Josh.
Hello, good to be back, Rob. Thanks for having me.
A lot of trouble with bonsais.
That's yeah, right. Much trouble in little bonsai.
That's right. All right, so minute 47 begins with Red getting approval from the guys and ends with Haywood being very confused. So we ended things yesterday with Boggs being wheeled out of Shawshank, you know, and being told that he's going to be he's going to really enjoy sipping food through straws. That's more
yeah, that's a way that you don't want to leave Shawshank in a wheelchair, disabled.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's very interesting, and obviously they can't show this because he's in the infirmary, but I'm so curious what Andy's reaction would be when he's told that. Basically, Hadley beat the crap out of Boggs, and then Boggs is never going to bother him again. You know, they sort of just leave that for us for our own imagination. But that would have been a great scene to have. You know, where he gets out of the infirmary.
I picture in his way, he would probably just have this kind of, you know, solemn, like sort of half smile.
That's right.
And not say anything.
That's I totally agree. That's what I was thinking also. But it still would have been a fun thing to hear. You know, I mean, again, we'll talk about this. I think on Thursday we get there, where basically, mm-hmm. you know, when Andy's back in his cell, or maybe it's the end of tomorrow, and you know, it would have been nice to have them add to the note. And by the way, Boggs is gone.
Yeah.
You know, you're safe. You know, that type of thing. Again, it's,
well,
it's
I wonder if he would believe it.
That's true.
Considering all that he had to go through, it's like, yeah, right.
Right, but it also depends on who would have told him and whatever. Again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because we'll talk about that note when we get to it, you know,
right.
Tomorrow or Thursday. Again, I'm trying to remember which mm-hmm. date it is. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, the whole idea, and again, we're going to see this through the course of this week, Andy doesn't really know that he's sort of made a friend now or found a protector, I guess you could say.
Uh-huh.
You know, so again, it would be interesting to know how he would think about that. Again, at the end of the movie, yeah. he does talk about the fact that he's a convicted felon, you know, who's being protected by everybody. But yeah. But basically, we see Red and his posse standing at the fence, watching Boggs being wheeled out, and Red had suggested to all the other guys that. You know, that Andy can use a nice welcome back when he gets out of the infirmary. And Haywood just looks at him and goes, sounds good to us. I figure we owe him that much for the beer. Now, again, I love William Sadler. I think he's a great actor. But he plays his character in such a ick fashion, you know, because it really does not make any sense you know, they need to repay him for the beer. It's that they should do this because a friend of theirs just got beaten up and is in the infirmary. You know, that's why you're doing it, not because of the beer.
Well, we're going to see in some of the later seconds in this minute just how Haywood doesn't quite understand connections between things.
No.
Including what chess has to do with rocks.
Well, again... That's the next line. I mean, Red goes, the man likes to play chess. Let's get him some rocks. And, you know, you know, us as the viewers, we know what this is because they've talked about, you know, Andy mentioned to Red about his dream of getting rocks to to create a you know, chess pieces for a chessboard, you know, that type of thing. But how do all these other cons know that? I mean, if I were to say to you, you know, hey, I like playing chess, can you get me some rocks? You'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Or maybe I've seen Shawshank enough times to understand that, oh yeah, you can make chess pieces out of rocks.
True, but you need a lot of time and patience. You know, to do that.
Yes.
but yeah, it's just it's an interesting comment from Red, because again, it's a comment for us. It's not necessarily for the other guys, because the other guys are not necessarily going to understand. Specifically at this point, again, Red possibly, you know, explains to them afterwards what the hell he's talking about. But he doesn't, it's not needed to be explained here, because, you know, we as the audience know what they're talking about. Even though someone like Haywood, there's no question in my mind that that line just goes right over his head. You know, he's got no clue, like, what rocks have to do with chess, if he even knows what chess is.
All right.
You know, That's part of the thing. Again, I like the way this character is played. There's no question about that. But it's just a lot of fun watching the way that they're you know, interacting here. And then the shot changes, and we see a whole bunch of prisoners working out in a field, I guess you could say. You see Shawshank.
Yeah, it's a neat scene. I like the fact that, you know, we see the prisoners digging, the guards on horseback. When I first saw this scene, I kind of almost thought that I was looking at a scene where there are Union soldiers, you know, based on the prison uniforms, you know, with the pants and the stripes. But certainly not soldiers.
See, I don't recall us seeing any of the prisoners beforehand with stripes on their pants. Do they make them wear stripes on the pants when they're working outside?
Maybe.
You know, and I love that you can see Shawshank in the background. Meaning they're not that close, but they're also not that far. You know, and it makes you wonder what they're doing. Like what type of work do you think they're intending for these guys to do? You have any idea? Again, I don't. I'm just curious.
I mean, maybe they're clearing a field to be used as farmland that had never been done before.
You think for the prison, or they're just trying to help out one of the local farmers? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the local farmers, because it seems far enough from the prison where I don't know if that would necessarily be their
land. Because they don't mention yet. They haven't started the Inside Out program. You know, where they're all able to do work on the outside. You know, and I wonder if this is considered, you know, a good job to do, like tar on the roof. You know, it's probably not that far into the summer at this point, because if they were tar on the roof in May, and then, you know, they're watching the movie. And then Andy gets beaten up, and then he's in the infirmary. I think they mentioned that he was in the infirmary for a month at that point. And you know, so it can't be that much afterwards that Hadley, you know, ends up beating up Boggs, because again, it happens right after that, and this can't be that long after that either.
Right.
So I would say this is probably late June, early July. So it might be a little hotter. Again, that would be my guesstimation. Could be wrong.
And another thing that I like about this scene is that we hear the music, and it's somewhat subdued. I mean, it's basically just a fiddle and guitar, but it's got that southern vibe. It really kind of sets the location of where Shawshank is. And Thomas Newman does a great job in this throughout the whole score, really. It's interesting. I mean, is he the brother, or is he like the son of Randy Newman? I'm trying to remember.
Is he related? I didn't know he was related.
I think he is related, to Randy Newman, which is interesting because Thomas Newman also did music scores for stuff that Randy Newman worked with. Thomas Newman did WALL-E, the Pixar film, and Randy Newman did all those Toy Story movies. So you had two Newmans working on those similar type of films. And I believe they're
Yes,
also
okay.
related to Alfred Newman, who was the famous
That's right.
Hollywood, composer,
No,
but not Alfred E.
What Me
Newman,
Worry.
who is of
Exactly,
What
What
We
Me Worry.
Worry fame.
So Thomas and Randy Newman are
Yes.
first cousins. They're cousins, okay?
They're
And
cousins,
Thomas
okay.
Newman is the son of Alfred Newman, who won 9 Oscars
Ah.
for composing over the course of
Right.
his career. Thomas has a brother named David Newman, and there are also two other uncles, Lionel and Emil, and all 6 of them together have earned over 90 Oscar nominations, making them the most Oscar-nominated family in
Yeah,
history.
no, a very, very
Yeah,
talented
seriously.
family, musically and
Yeah,
otherwise.
seriously. Interesting. I wonder what I wonder what the next generation will bring. Interesting. And I mean, you said that it gives off the southern vibe. Why? I mean, they're not in the South. This is in Maine. So what makes you think?
Oh, that's right. It is in Maine. I don't know. When I hear the fiddle and guitar music, I think the South, especially like the way that they kind of like bend the notes and stuff. And then when you see people working like this, again, it
Yes.
evokes the Southern
No,
vibe. But
I
yeah, you're
agree with
right.
you.
It's
I
there in
agree.
Maine.
I definitely agree with
It's
you
just
that it
the
gives off
South.
that vibe for sure. I mean, again, it also makes us think of Deliverance. It makes us think of chain gangs, all those things.
Right,
So it makes
Deliverance, yeah.
sense.
I don't know. Maybe those are just instruments associated with prison.
Maybe.
the whole harmonica playing, when you're
Well,
in the
there's a
cell.
harmonica in this movie too.
I
We'll
thought.
get there in a few months, but yeah,
Yeah.
there is a harmonica here. And so yeah, it's also a great wide shot showing us all of there are tens of guys that are doing this work. I mean, again, I always think when I see scenes like this, about how difficult it must have been for the director to do this scene, because he's got all these extras that have to be hoeing and wheelbarrowing in the background without messing up the shot, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah, the days of having extras on your film when you
That's right.
couldn't just CG
That's right.
them
And it's
now.
also great how you see the horse trotting on the side at around 20 seconds. You see the horse moving sideways. So it's very, very interesting to see that. And then we're back with our good friend Haywood. And he's basically
Right.
hoeing, and he sees something on the ground. And he believes he's hit jackpot. And he leans down and picks up what looks like a rock, cleans it off a little bit, and discreetly puts it in his pants pocket. And then, I love the way that he moves along with everyone else, pretending to be working as he's moving, closer to everyone else in the posse. And he gets closer and he goes, "Guys, I got one. I got one. Look." And Floyd looks at him and goes, "Haywood, that isn't soapstone. And it ain't alabaster either." And then Haywood looks at him and goes, "What are you, a geologist?" And Snooze looks over at him and goes, "He's right. It ain't." And then Haywood looks down at it and he's very confused
Well,
as to what it is. And he goes, "Well, what the hell is it?"
for those playing along at home, I did some research on this. According to a website called FireMountainGems.com, soapstone is also known as, what is it? Oh, shoot. Steatite? Steatle? I don't know. It's a dense, heat-resistant metamorphic rock composed mostly of talc and is easily carved and widely used for countertops, sinks, fireplace surrounds, and artisan sculptures. But alabaster, on the other hand, is a soft, fine-grained, and translucent stone that has been used for thousands of years to create sculptures, vases, and ambient lighting. And then the last note that I had, I went on a Reddit thread where they were talking about stone sculpting of chess pieces, and somebody was asking, well, you know, how do I start carving
Well,
chess
you
pieces out of
one thing.
stone?
The first
And
thing
somebody
is
writes,
you murder your wife and her lover, and then you go to prison,
oh,
and
wait,
you get
yes, you
shunned.
got it. That's exactly what it said. The first step is quite simply to get sentenced to two consecutive life terms in prison for the murders of your wife and her lover and end up in tough prison. Then have your friends collect rocks while they're out, preferably of soapstone and alabaster, as they'll be easier to carve without specialized tools. Don't worry about not getting things right the first time, as you'll have the next few decades to practice.
That's great. That's right.
You
Well,
got it.
I sort of know this movie, so why not? But yeah. Wow,
Yeah.
that works. And we're gonna have to wait until tomorrow for Haywood to actually find out what it is. Yeah.
Yes. What is
Don't know.
it? That's going to be the catch for
That's
people to
right.
listen to
What's in
tomorrow's
the pocket?
episode.
What's in your pocket? I also
What's in
love how
your
all these
pocket?
guys have suspenders.
Well, that's what
Yeah.
they did back in the
It
40s.
made me wonder, when did someone invent the idea of suspenders?
Well, the belt is older, but I don't know. I guess it just became popular at certain times.
So it was they were invented in 1820. They were originally known as braces, and they were invented by a British tailor named Albert Thurston. Beforehand, they did have things that were similar, but they didn't really work the same way. They were called bretelles, which they had in France in the 1700s, and they were just ribbons of fabric that were tied to buttonholes of breeches. And they were considered undergarments, and no one ever expected them to be seen outside. They were just holding up your pants from the inside.
Well, nobody wants to see these
Of
ribbons on
course.
the
And then
outside,
in
please.
1820, Albert Thurston decided that he was going to do something similar, but they would be on the outside, because part of the idea was is that the pants, men's pants at the time were cut extremely high. Which was well above the natural waistline. And belts were not impractical because it went around the stomach as opposed to around the waist. Therefore, you'd have the suspenders, which would hold things up around the area of where they were supposed to. And they would have an H-back shape that looped onto buttons inside the trousers. And in 1871, Mark Twain actually patented an addition to suspenders, and he created the adjustable and detachable straps. Because he.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that he invented the
No,
tweening
sorry.
bra.
I
Ah, see
did.
what I did
He
there?
found that traditional suspenders were very uncomfortable and designed an adjustable elastic alternative in order to snap onto everything from underpants to corsets, meaning, the idea that you didn't need to use buttons anymore, and you can, move them from any type of garment that you wanted to. And then in 1894, the metal clip-on clasp was invented, which is what people mostly know about nowadays. And therefore, you didn't need to have buttons tailored into your waistbands. The popularity of faded around World War I because soldiers began getting accustomed to having utility belts on their uniforms so that when they returned home, people were starting to wear lower waisted pants. And therefore you'd have to use belts as opposed to suspenders because you wanted to go around your waist as opposed to your stomach.
Interesting how war tends to change things even later
That is true.
in the civilian life.
That is very true. Okay, do you have anything else you want to talk about this minute? All right, so today's
Nope, all good
segment
here.
is Talking Tuesday, where my guest will give their top five movies with narration or narrators in movies, however you want to look at that.
Right. All right. Well, you were kind enough to send me a list, though, you know, it was interesting. I thought I would have a lot more films here that I would be able to really catch upon here for a top five, but it wasn't as much. But I still have my five.
Yes.
So this is the ones with narrators, right? Okay. So the first one that I've got, and I didn't really associate this one with having a narrator, but I suppose yes, it does have one, and that's Inside Out. You know, the Pixar film, because you do hear Joy, I guess, talking through most of it. So that one was a pretty good one. And then number four, another Pixar one, Ratatouille, which is just a great movie overall. I really love the premise, the storyline, the music, how they depict everything. In fact, I still use the line from that one sometimes, where if my wife Lena asks me what I'd like for dinner tonight, I say perspective. Especially when we're exasperated after a long day. Number three, I'm gonna say The Never-Ending Story. That's sort of a meta movie in a way, because it's a story within a story. But I remember seeing that one in the theaters back in, I guess that
Yes,
was
me too.
84 or something like that.
1988.
And I don't
Yeah,
know if I
84
mentioned
too.
at one point, back when I was a child actor, I tried out for the role of the lead in Neverending Story. I think it was two. It was either two or three. It was one of those. And I was very close to getting it, actually. I had met with the directors and the producers, and they were talking about how there was going to be travel to like three or four different countries to film this. It was going to take months. And I don't recall saying this, but my parents seemed to tell me that, like, I turned it down because I wanted to just live a regular life and be in school. My knowledge was that they just didn't go with me, but that was the closest I ever came to, I guess, stardom. I could have been in Never-Ending Story too. Number two is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, another really fun movie with Matthew Broderick narrating it throughout. An interesting little note about this one: I got a chance just about a week ago to meet Alan Ruck, who played Cameron in that one.
Oh,
He
wow.
lives in L.A., and his son was in a music program. There was like a music camp just in Burbank, and he was in the same band as my daughter. They were doing Beatles songs and stuff, and so Alan was there with his wife, and we ended up going to ice cream afterward, and I talked to him. He's a very nice guy. Yeah, Alan Ruck.
Oh, did you say to him, fry, fry, fry?
I didn't say that, but one of the songs that my daughter's group ended up doing was Twist and Shout. And so I kind of broke the ice to talk to him when we were at the ice cream place by saying, "So, how did that Twist and Shout compare to Ferris Bueller?" And so that's how we started talking.
Oh,
Yeah.
wow. And what was his response to
He said, "Oh, this one was better." I think probably because his son was in it.
That's right. I was going to say you should have asked him when the son was
Yeah.
around.
Anyway, and finally, the number one, I'd have to say, is The Princess Bride. You know, having Peter Falk narrating everything, and just a wonderful movie. I was on one of the Movies by Minutes for The Princess Bride years ago, when they were talking about fencing, because I used to be a fencing instructor for a summer camp as a younger man, and we analyzed that. That was a lot of fun to do. And I've just,
You and your sport.
yeah, well, I've done a lot of things, man. But with Peter Falk, that was, I hate to say it, the first time I had really encountered Peter Falk. I never appreciated him for all the work he did on Columbo. It's only within the last, I want to say, month, that I've started watching episodes of Columbo with my wife, and it's
Oh, wow.
great. I love it. I mean, there's so many of them too.
I watched all of them, I think like 2 years ago. I went and reviewed each and every
Ah,
one of them. They were
yeah.
great.
What a very good actor. And the stories are well crafted too. But the last thing I have to say about the narration things, when I went through that list, I thought it was amazing that there were a ridiculous number of Land Before Time movies that had narration. There were at least like a dozen of them. And also, a lot of Disney and animated films seem to have narration. Lots to choose from there. Anyway, so that's my list.
All right, excellent. Now we will play the first of two games today. We'll start with Hi-Lo. So let's spin the wheel and see what you have. All right, the 1958 film Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
That's another one where I've never seen it, but I've heard of the film. I don't know. IMDb will say 7.3, Rotten Tomatoes 80.
Okay, so it's 7.9 and a 97.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
Everybody
yeah.
likes that
So
movie.
you
Okay.
well. Yes and no. You always have, you should take into consideration when looking at older movies that it's much harder nowadays for ever since Rotten Tomato came around for them to cull the cull the internet to get the various reviews from older movies. So therefore, the percentages are usually much higher.
Right. If they didn't have websites out there that
That's
just
right.
panned every single movie.
Exactly. And again, the ones that panned, you probably won't be able to find.
Right.
All right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. Right, the 1954 film, The Country Girl.
Don't know that one. I don't know.
Don't take my advice. I'll
All
after
right.
all.
7.4 IMDb and 83 Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. You're very good. 7.2 and 82. So
Look at
there
that.
you
There you
see?
go. I'm better with movies I don't know.
Apparently. Right, let's spin the wheel for the final one today. Right, the 1991 film The Prince of Tides with Barbara
Another
Streisand
one
and Nick.
I've heard of it, never saw it.
An amazing book.
Maybe
The book is much better than the
was
movie.
based on a book. I don't know. 7.8 and 87%.
All right, that one you're way off on. 6.8 and 73.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, now we will play the second game. Name that novel adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. This is a movie that came out in 2009, and the original title of the story is Alive in Joburg.
Okay, I'm gonna need to do like 20 questions to figure some of this out.
It's directed by Neil Blomkamp.
That doesn't do much for me. Was this a sci-fi movie?
Yes.
Let's see. 2009? Let's see. Not really sure. Did it take place in space?
And no, it takes place in Joburg.
Joburg. I don't even know where Joburg is.
Johannesburg, Johannesburg.
Oh, Johannesburg. Oh, well, wait. The only movie I know that's associated with that one was Blood Diamond, but that's not a sci-fi.
And that's not also that's not in South Africa. That's in like the Congo or something like that.
Well, okay.
And it also wasn't 2009. I think it was 2006 Blood Diamond.
Okay, well, I'm in the sort of the right range. 2009.
Here, I'll tell you the IMDb synopsis. In a future Earth in which aliens are isolated in a remote ghetto, a government agent finds himself banished there.
Oh, wait. I seem to recall this movie, but never saw it. It was like District 9 or something.
Yes, that's what it's called. Very
Hey, there you go.
There you go. Perfect. All right. So, Josh, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure, you can find me at joshhorowitz.com. You can also find me on my other podcasts, 5 minutesoftrouble.com or 5 minutesofbonsai.com or 12 chimes it's midnight, which is actually 12chimesradio.com. So go and check them out and listen for a new episode of 5 Minutes of Trouble coming soon.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieaboutminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieaboutminute@movierob.net. Until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy trying. Or no, or get busy dying.